It seems only yesterday we were all ridiculing Prince Charles, talking to his flowers in the same way that you heard Clint Eastwood talking to trees at the beginning of the program. But Charles may not have been so eccentric after all. According to the book we're about to discuss, trees and other plants don't just have feelings. They can and do talk to each other, although the word talk is perhaps slightly inaccurate, but they certainly communicate. Peter Willebin is a forest ranger from Germany who has introduced some groundbreaking changes in the way forests are managed in that often heavily timbered country. He's written a book which has become an absolute global smash and has been translated into 19 languages. Our friend Tim Flannery, no friend of the Australian, has written the foreword in which he says, opening this book, you are about to enter a wonderland, the hidden life of trees, what they feel and how they communicate. And Peter now joins us from Manchester. Peter, welcome to the program. You must be astonished by your success.
Yes, that's right. I'm a forester, which didn't want to write anything. And I make guided tours through my forest. And the people are always asking, where can we read more about it? And my wife always begged, please write up to minst 10 pages so that the people have something to read after. But I regret and said, no, I'm not able to write. That's not my thing. And one year I give up my resistance, write up and the guided tour and send it to several publishers and said, okay, if no one wants to have it, that's it. And you know, see what's going to happen.
I think you may, in fact, have written a dangerous book. Another old friend of the program is Peter Singer. And as you know, Peter's writings on animal liberation have been quite transformational. And what you're telling us about trees, among other plants, is absolutely challenging. For example, tell us about trees screaming with pain.
That's when trees are thirsty. You will hear a noise if you're able to. It's ultrasonic, which are going through the forest. And scientists so far don't know what this has to mean, but trees are able to communicate on several ways, on chemical ways, on electrical ways, via the roots. And so perhaps one day, not so far from now, we will know what these screams has to mean.
You describe the process of a tree saying, ouch, when its branches are cut. But it's a slow response. Talk about that.
Yeah, trees are very slowly, and that's one reason why we discovered it so lately, that they work like we work. For example, when insect bites into a leaf, then the tree can taste what sort of saliva that is, can identify the insect and can call their predators so that they get the tree rid of those little caterpillars or whatsoever. And this tree doesn't keep it for itself, but warn its neighbors through the roots, where it is sending electrical and chemical signals, like our nerve system. And because the roots didn't reach every comrade, the tree uses a fungi network. The fungi filaments are working like our internet and sending
this
those
is your
signals.
Wood wide yeah, web. We've wide actually web. Done a few programs lately on the fungal underground. This is how I think this is weird.
Yeah, that is really beautiful. And this fungal internet is really expensive. A tree needs to pay up to one-third of its photosynthesis production to use this internet, because fungi are not able to produce their own food, so they have to rely on trees and to do anything, and this is what they do. They are the internet of the forest.
We think about plants being robotic, you point out, following a genetic code, but you suggest that plants and trees, in effect, have a choice about what to do, that they're able to decide, have a sort of memory and even different personalities.
Yeah. For example, a mother tree, that's a really new research being done in British Columbia. Mother trees are really able to know which seedlings are their child. And then they connect with those little seedlings, support them, let's say.
Slow down. They explain this in a bit more detail.
Trees have on their root tips brain-like structures. That's research being done by the University of Bonn. That's my birth town. And this brain-like structures produce brain-like processes. And with those root tips, trees can find out what's going on under in the soil. And they can, for example, they realize, there's another tree. Is it the same species? Is it a family member? That are my own child. And then they connect. And then they pump a sugar solution through the roots to support the children, or let's better say, they suckle their children.
I made the point that I made the point about the great Prussian leader who used to go out and hug trees to get nourishment from them. But that's not silly. If trees, in fact, have the sense of community themselves, if they are effectively thinking beings. Now, tell us about the way they, however, prefer their own community. They're not necessarily kind to other trees.
No. One tree is not a forest. It just can survive when there is a forest of the same species, so then they can cool together down. For example, the University of Aachen, which is working in my forest district, found out that unmanaged forest can cool down up to 3 degrees below the temperature in managed forest. And that's important when we look at the climate change. Unmanaged forest may manage that much better than managed forest. But between tree species, there's no peace. Tree species are genetically as far away as we and, let's say, goldfish. And so they don't care about other trees when they are different species. For example, beech trees, which are common to my forest district, harass oak trees. They take them away water by growing their roots into their roots. They take away the light by growing through their crowns with their branches and switch off the light for the oak trees. And the oak trees get in panic. And that's long known to foresters that oaks in panic will build so-called fear branches that are little bunches of branches which will go away after some time because they don't get enough light. That doesn't make any sense to build branches deep and in deeper part of a stem. And therefore, you can see a tree in panic makes nonsense like we do.
You point out that trees have different personality traits. Willows stick to themselves. They're the loners of the tree world. Yeah. Their seeds fly far away from other trees, many kilometres. The trees grow fast and don't live very long. There's all these sort of interesting traits, aren't there?
The different species have different strategies, but what you can see is that when a tree grows fast, it won't get old, and that's a natural principle on every being. When you have a fast youth growing, you won't get old, and therefore, some trees, like loner trees, like the willow or like birches, they try to conquer new territories. Without a social community, they have to do so, but the trees which build our primeval forest, like beech or like eucalyptus in Australia, they need their social structures, and they educate their youth to grow slow. And tree youth is, and that's all over the world, nearly the same, will last about 200 or 300 years, and then they are allowed to grow faster.
We're talking to Peter Wallabane on the hidden life of trees, what they feel, how they communicate, discoveries from a secret world. Tell us about evidence of trees learning.
Yeah, trees, for example, that suffer from a heavy drought that we had in Germany in the year 2003, They changed afterwards their water management because the wood have cracked and that causes pain. And that's the best teacher. When you have pain, you won't do that again. The trees store this memories, and each year in spring, when the soil is wet from winter rain, they could spend much water. A tree can, a beech tree in Germany can spend every day 500 liters, consume 500 liters. But when he remembers that there may come a dry summer, he doesn't spend too much water in spring to have something in reserve for a maybe dry summer. But trees, when they have a memory, that sounds strange, but you can prove it by another thing better. Trees, for example, they can count. In Germany, another University of Bochum found out that apple trees, for example, count the days in March above 20 degrees Celsius, because when there's just one day, that can mean that the season will fall back in winter, that there will be another late frost, and the new leaves will be frozen. And therefore, the tree counts the warm days, and just when a certain amount is achieved, then it will come out with new leaves. And therefore, that causes two things. A tree can count, and a tree must have a memory.
Peter, not so long ago, I was talking to a scientist in Hawaii on what she sees as the pretty rapid response of some forms of coral to climate change. You know, we are devastated in this country by concern for the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, yeah.
But she says that they're already finding some polyp systems which are in fact evolving rather quickly. Do you, given what you're saying about trees, given that they can in fact learn to deal with drought, is there a chance that they will do better in climate change than perhaps we fear?
Yeah, I think they will do better in climate change than we will fear, because trees have to deal with climate changes because they get so old. For example, an eucalyptus tree, which will be about 1,000 years old, has suffered from many little climate changes. So perhaps this one is a bigger one, but I think that shouldn't be a problem with an ecosystem which is undisturbed, and that's the problem. Nowadays, we are cutting a lot of timber, for example, for biomass power plants to create eco-electricity in Germany and perhaps even in Australia. And therefore, we hurt such ecosystems, and we in principle, we transport climate change, or we fire the climate change by disturbing the forest. So it would be better to reduce our consumption and leave at minimum a bigger percentage of forest alone.
Peter, we're talking about trees in the natural world. What about trees when we move them into comparative isolation in the cities?
Yeah, trees in cities are really loners, lone wolves. They are like street kids. They grew up without mother trees. They grew up without social interaction. Therefore, they stand on their own in the first decades. That's good for a tree. He grows and grows and grows, and we all think, hey, he's really healthy, he's growing so fast. But a young tree, when you remember, should grow very slowly. So street trees can become very old. And they suffer even from the climate. It's dry, it's hot. At nighttime, it's very cold. And what's even worse, when a street tree stands beneath a lantern, which is burning 24 hours or even the whole night, and then a tree can't sleep. And that sounds funny, that trees have to sleep, but that's new research being done by Finnish and Austrian scientists, that a tree let hang his branches at night, just a little bit, and stand up with a sunrise. And now we can say, okay, that has something to do with water pressure. It's going down during the night. But no, the water pressure is going up at night. A tree gets a little thicker at night, so that can't be the reason. The scientists don't know what that has to mean, but what is clear is that trees really go to sleep.
Peter, where did your love of trees begin?
It started, with my childhood. I always loved nature. I had little spiders in glasses, and I had a little chicken which I hatched out of an egg, and which thought I was its mother. And I have several animals. And since I studied forestry, I thought, that's something good for nature, and now I'm where I belong. But first, I recognized that the conventional forestry is really too rough to trees. And then I changed it, watched a little bit carefully, and my love, got fire.
Well, of course, forestry is about an industry of cutting down trees. And for you, there was a turning point when you realized that the forests you were working in were not in the optimal environment, and you particularly disliked the spraying of toxic chemicals.
Right. Most of our forests are plantations all over the world. And for a plantation, it's clear that when you have just one species, then they are an easy aim for insects, and therefore you need insecticides, chemicals to keep the trees alive. And I think we have done such a lot of damage to our environment so that we should diminish in forests. Slow down, put a slower gear, do it without insecticides, and leave reserves which are big enough so trees can live their social life without disturbance.
You, I'd love the story about you. You convinced your bosses to let you set aside a section of burial woods, and you could be buried under a tree, which would be your natural headstone for a century.
Yeah, right. This old beech forest should have been clear-cutted. And this time I was a state forest officer, and I was told to cut those old beech trees. And this forest is 4,000 years old, and it would be a pity. We just have one per mil of those forests in Germany remaining. And therefore I decided that we made a burial ground out of it, that people may bury a big beech tree as a living gravestone, and therefore it will be protected for the next 100 years.
Peter Singer, of course, alerted the world to the fact that animals that we raise for, in industrial numbers can suffer terribly. It seems to me that you are suggesting that trees can also suffer terribly. Will this have to be incorporated into a better morality?
Yeah, I think so. I think within 10 years we will have the same discussion on plants than nowadays on animals. And that doesn't mean that we are not allowed to use them. What else shall we use than plants or animals to survive? But my aim is that we better care for them, that we better raise them, that we pay them respect when we use them. And at every point that when we have a choice to treat them better, then we should treat them better. That's my aim.
And people are listening, aren't they? Because the book is such a surprising success.
Yeah, they are listening. And the second aim is that people look at trees like on elephants. Nowadays, we look at trees like they are oxygen producer, timber producer, water purifier, like servants. And when we look at an elephant, we say, wow, what a wonderful being. And no one thinks about benefits for us. And I want people to look at trees like on an elephant, that are plant elephants. So say that one of the biggest living beings on Earth, and nearly every person has a tree within a reach of, let's say, 200 or 300 meters around his house. So we are surrounded by plant elephants, and that could be a lot of fun when we know what's going on among them.
Peter, thanks very much for your time. Peter Wallenden, The Hidden Life of Trees. It's published here by Black Ink.